Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. My name is Ant, and I'm here with my two friends, Will and Anna.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm a friend.
Yes.
Me too.
And so are you, dear listener.
Aww. Most of you. Some of you stink.
This week... We're going to name them individually at the end.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But this week, we're talking about the year 1328. Now, what I'd like to do is get our three words from everyone. So, Anna, what three words summarize your paragraph?
Hey, big spender!
Hey, big spender, okay.
That's Hey, Big Spender from the musical Sweet Charity? Sweet Charity, got it.
What are your three words, Will?
Another Scottish warlord.
Another Scottish warlord. Good. Yeah. And mine is bad baby maker.
I'll allow it. I think there's an argument to be made that baby maker could be one word, like widow maker.
Oh, okay. Really bad baby maker.
There you go. Excellent.
Okay. And I'm going to start us off with my really bad baby maker. Not mine, just the really bad baby maker. Anyway, the late Middle Ages, which were where we're in today, was a period of intense turmoil in Europe. There was political schemes and machinations, and it was this gradual shift of power from these feudal, smaller structures and familial lines to sort of centralized states and, well, like also familial lines, but more centralized power. And one of the figures at the center of all this was a chap called Charles IV of France. Not to be mistaken of with Charles IV, not of France, who comes later.
Or Charles VI of France, who I think I've talked about.
Yes.
They really should have just had more names.
There should be more names.
There are so many. We could have had like an Arsenio II.
Yes, so Arsenio II of France was also known as Charles the Fair. Not sure if he was like really sporting or was just really, really hot.
Or pale.
Yeah. He could be pale. Yeah. Or, like, paid for things, I guess, like F-A-R-E. I don't know.
It's Charles expensive. The taxi fare.
Yeah. Anyway, he was French. He was so French, in fact, his coat of arms is about 2 dozen fleur-de-lis. Gold
wow.
on blue. Yeah, that's as French as you get, really.
Yeah.
That's maximum fleur-de-lis. And this was set, he was set in the backdrop of the state becoming more powerful and centralized. At the time in Europe, the main players being France and England, obviously, the Holy Roman Empire, the Kingdom of Castile and Aragon was around, Denmark and Italian city-states, and the Byzantine Empire were still in the mix, not super influential, but you know, still in the mix.
A crowded continent.
A very crowded continent, lots of players tugging at the seams. And we don't hear much about Aragon these days. So what happened to them, I wonder? Anyway, he turns out...
I was going to make a Lord of the Rings joke, but I feel like we've actually milked that well. What is the expression? Oh my god.
Yeah, milked that well.
Yeah, we milked that well. That well.
That's the one. Anyway, he was the last king of the direct line of the Capetian dynasty.
Ooh.
So the Capetian dynasty held the French crown for an impressive 341 years.
That's pretty good.
And it could be argued that it's the longest ruling single family line in history. And if you include other branches, they continue to this day, actually, which we'll discover in a bit.
Oh.
So hold on to your hats, dear listener.
Were they all gangsters who wanted to make sure someone had understood what they were talking about?
I was thinking that as well. Hey, capiche.
Yes, they were all gangsters that wanted to... This is where we get the word capiche from.
Yeah. Gabagool.
Gabagool, yeah. Actually, that's not where capiche comes from. So if you were to guess other than that, where would you think it came from?
Capetia.
Nope. It's a
Cap it.
Close. It's a nice cape, actually.
Oh.
Because of a chap named Hugh Capet.
Oh.
Or Chapet. Said to have gotten the name because he wore a nice cape.
That kind of cape. Okay.
Cool. Also, it's maybe from the Latin caput, which means chief or head, so we don't know. But anyway, that goes back years and years and years before that. Anyway, Charlie the Fourth, his life, the rule, and the sort of political turmoil following his death was very influential in European history, mainly because of the sort of build-up to the Hundred Years' War that comes later. But first, let's get to know this guy a little bit better.
Yeah.
So, 1294, Charles the Fourth ascends to the French throne. He's born and then ascends to the French throne in 1322.
Immediately.
He was born first and then ascends. And this was following the death of his brother, Philip the Fifth. Interestingly, can you guess Philip's sort of honorific or title or name? If he was Charles the Fair, I'll give you a clue. He was tall.
Philip the Gangly.
Philip the Tall. So Philip came to power because the previous king died, who was his older brother, but his brother did not have a son. So Philip did not have a son because the son wasn't born yet because his wife was pregnant. And thus,
oh wow,
is it an heir? Is it not an heir?
Charles really just sneaked in there.
Charles snuck in there. The child actually didn't live very long anyway. Potentially, who knows why. Oh. Could be some intrigue there. But also, the wife wanted to be queen, and queen regent rather, and give her daughter, the legitimate daughter of the previous king, Philip, the throne. But that was denied by Charles, who took the crown, baby's not born, not a king, you're a woman, can't have the throne,
yep.
And immediately made a law saying women could not inherit the throne.
And that law exists to this day.
I think it might, actually.
It probably does.
I think it actually might. The niece would have been queen, but because of what's called the Salic Law, you know, all this crafty stuff and this maneuvering, they can't have that. So his rule continued the Capetian tradition of centralizing state power, importantly, the tradition of conflict with England.
Yay! A central tenet of the House of Capet.
A very central tenet. So one of the key areas of conflict was a place called Aquitaine.
Oh.
So Aquitaine, so in France, it was an important area, it was, you know, direct landing point for the English across the Channel. This is prior to the Channel Tunnel, so it was all sailing, I'm assuming.
Yeah, there was only one Eurostar a day.
Yeah, it was very limited, yeah. Very limited.
Can I just... isn't Aquitaine in southwest France?
Yes, southwest
Spain?
France. Yeah, but it was a big landing point for them. I don't know why. Huh. Yes, it is southwest France.
They
but
just love going down the coast. It's beautiful.
I mean, it is beautiful. Yeah. I think it's because of the trade, because northern France typically has nothing of interest in it, whereas southwest France is beautiful, you know,
well,
wine regions and stuff.
Crabs.
Crabs?
Crabs, yeah.
Crepes.
Crabs and crepes.
Oh, I love a crab crepe.
Yeah, come to northwest France. We've got crabs, we've got crepes.
Put a bit of Nutella on that.
I think that's genuinely how they see themselves.
So anyway, Aquitaine, southwest of France, it was actually a very important and wealthy duchy, and England held this area for much of the Middle Ages. But Charlie said enough was enough, and was steadily, slowly encroaching onto this land, you know, putting like those crab creperies closer and closer each day.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually even tried to confiscate it. But this was a thorny sticking point, and one of the bits that were laying the groundwork of this clashing of, you know, this is the sort of the front line, as it were, of English-French tensions at the time was in Aquitaine. So there's one other Capetian I want to bring to the forefront was the sister of the two kings, the French princess Isabella of France.
Ooh.
She had
was her surname Noah Armenia.
No, it was forget about it.
Forget about it, yeah.
Isabella, forget about it, yeah. France.
Yeah.
She did have a nickname as well. I'm going to give you a hint, you can guess what it was.
Mickey Blue Eyes.
Yeah.
She was not fair, so far as I know.
Okay.
And she was not tall.
Okay.
So what else could she
Plain.
Be? Plain. She was Isabella the Plain.
No way.
No, she wasn't.
Pudgy.
She was the she-wolf of France.
Oh, that's actually pretty dope.
The best one.
Yeah.
You know, there's a she-wolf
in the closet.
In the monarch.
Yeah. In the castle.
But she married none other than Edward II of England.
Ooh.
Oh, the confessor.
Yes, and was therefore an English queen, as well as being a French princess.
Wow.
And you think this could unite the families, unite the territories, and have everyone lives happily ever after. But no, she really enjoyed stirring things up. And when there was infighting in the court of England, she would actually stick her oar in and actually stir things up and stoke the fires of it.
It was cool that she just walked around with an oar all the time.
Isabella, the she-wolf boater.
Oars lady.
But she would like entrap people, have French deals for land and gold and things like that, and make them look guilty and cause this infighting, saying they're not loyal and all that
Wheeler
kind of stuff.
Wheeler dealer.
Oh, yeah. And she would actually be helping French invasions behind the scenes, like information here, bit of gold there, you know, all that kind of she-wolf typical stuff like that.
Yeah.
She had a lover as well as King Edward II, called Roger Mortimer.
Ah.
Do you know Roger Mortimer?
Not personally.
Yeah, great dude.
You didn't meet in your time
at court?
Yeah,
we did. We did overlap
after you accepted.
Yeah. No, we overlapped. I mean, we were in meetings together. Yeah, yeah, we had a couple of calls together.
Yeah, a couple of VTCs.
Yeah. Like, I think he'd know my name.
So Roger, he mounts an invasion, and that was successful.
Of what? Sorry,
of England.
Oh, okay.
And this was the one that actually dethroned Edward II, and therefore brought onto the throne Edward III, which was her daughter, and therefore she could control him better. And
so her lover invades her husband's homeland, mm-hmm. wins,
and installs her son to the throne.
Her son, not his son. It's not an illegitimate
son. Okay. Yeah. And so, like, that's this all happens during Charles's rule in France, and so
he's like, you know what? Fair.
Yeah. Well, that's why he's Charles the Fair.
Yeah.
But this made the diplomatic relations even trickier. Edward III would then go on to claim the French throne later on, and that was another one of the whole contentious factors of the Hundred Years' War. Also, Charles IV would not help matters. He did not produce a son.
Ah, you had one
Absolute
job.
Absolute classic. So his brother didn't do it. He didn't do it. And this inability led to a succession crisis that even actually threatened the stability of the Capetian dynasty. A house had been in power since the year 987.
Mm.
So in all that time, long line of sons, no son. And in spite of his vigorous and thorough attempts at producing a male sire, and if you want to read more about that, I've got some fanfic on the Patreon. He does die in 1328, the year in question. And this heralds the end of the direct Capetian rule.
Oh, wow.
And this ushers in an era of political unrest in Europe. Instead of the crown passing to Edward III of England, who held this claim through his mother, or Isabella of France, it was given to his cousin Philip of Valois.
Oh.
So this choice would go on and spark yet another spark of the many sparks of the Hundred Years' War. And that's obviously, you know, shaped massively European identities and that kind of stuff.
There. Yeah.
So, in my research, I tried desperately, and now I can't link the Medicis exactly back to here.
Wow, we haven't heard about the Medicis in a long time.
But the Valois dynasty,
yeah,
and one of the descendants, which was King Henry II, married Catherine de' Medici.
Classic.
In about 1540 or so.
Okay. 400 years later.
Yeah.
200 years later.
I'm saying they're playing the long game here.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm not saying they're behind the fall of the Capetians, but it does work out pretty well for them later on.
Where were they when it was happening?
Exactly. Who knows? Anyway, the Capetian dynasty's enduring legacy remains through contemporary figures like King Philippe VI of Spain, who's still around. He's a notable descendant. The lineage can be traced to other individuals who have made significant impacts outside of royal circles, such as...
Serena Williams.
Actress Brooke Shields.
Really?
What? Yeah. Apparently her genealogy has links to Henry IV of France, which is a Capetian monarch.
Wow.
So, obviously, Brooke Shields, famous actress. I looked her up before this because I actually wasn't aware of too much of her work. So I'm going to... give you a couple of movies.
Okay.
One of them is not one of her movies.
Okay.
And is in fact a fake movie. And you have to guess which one the fake movie is.
I feel like... Okay, yeah, I'm ready for this.
Okay. Blue Lagoon, Pretty Baby, Mysteriosa, or The Midnight Meat Train.
Oh, God. Well, I know Blue Lagoon is real. I think that's kind of her first big one.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon the third one, what was it called? Mysteriosa. I'm going to go with Mysteriosa.
Can you give me the other two?
Blue Lagoon, Pretty Baby, Mysteriosa, and The Midnight Meat Train.
I mean, The Midnight Meat Train is too good to be fake. Yeah,
he wouldn't have made that up.
I know. I'm going Pretty Baby.
Yeah.
It is Mysteriosa.
Oh, good job, Will. Nice.
So The Midnight Meat Train actually does exist, and there's actually a remake or maybe just another film with that name that is...
There's two Midnight Meat Trains.
I'm not sure. She's still acting. She's still acting.
And it's genuinely an excellent film. And if you can, if you're thinking about going to see Oppenheimer or Barbie, I think probably just ditch that plan.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, by the way, to be clear.
Okay.
I've never heard of it until now.
One other famous person with links, Tom Hanks.
Oh. No way.
Tom Hanks apparently reported to be a distant descendant of King John of England, which is sort of an ancestor of the Capetian line through the maternal line or something. I mean, they're all kind of connected.
Yeah. He was the train in Midnight Meat Train, I think.
He was the train. Yeah. The train conductor.
Yeah.
Anyway, in conclusion, life and death of Charles IV, profound effects on shaping European history, the power vacuum of his death, no son, bad baby maker, power vacuum, 100 years war, bloodlines, Medici's, end of section. I didn't do an outro.
All right. I think I'm up next. And today I'm talking about one of history's biggest spenders. A man named Mansa.
Rishi Sunak.
I'm talking about the historic
Inflation's out of control.
Liz Truss. We are actually going to talk about inflation, which is everybody's favorite comedy podcast topic. No, I'm talking about a man named Mansa Musa, who was one of the, well, probably the most famous ruler of the Mali Empire. So I'm back in Mali. I've spoken about them before, way back when we did the episode on 1531 and the Songhai Empire. And I talked about Timbuktu, and we all love Timbuktu. Yes. But we're, of course, a few hundred years before that. I'm going to talk about Mali before the Songhai and Mansa Musa. So Musa, as his given name is, which is the Arabic form of Moses. He was born probably around the end of the 13th century. We're not quite sure, but he ascends to the throne of the Mali Empire in about 1312, gaining the title Mansa, which means ruler or king in the Mande language. And as I was researching this, every time I typed Mansa, M-A-N-S-A, I added an extra S at the end because I'm so used to typing Kansas that the muscle memory was like, and there it is.
Mansus.
So Mansus Musa. The Mali Empire had conquered the Ghana Empire and gradually expanded to control areas that are now Guinea, Senegal, Mauritania, the Gambia, and of course, Mali itself.
Make sure now, this is Mali, M-A-L-I.
M-A-L-I.
Not Mali the party drug.
Not Mali the club drug. Okay, that does come into play later on.
Oh, okay, here we go.
Yeah, Mansa Musa.
Well, I've taken mine about 20 minutes ago. Should be sitting in right now.
What's a club?
Ask your mate Roger Mortimer. I bet he knows.
Yeah, that's where he picked up Isabella.
Yeah. Yes, Molly, M-A-L-I, not to be confused with the drug, or Molly, the American girl from World War II.
What?
Sorry, that's a joke for, again, the 7 American people listening to this.
Who were alive in World War II.
It's a whole thing. So Mali, the empire, is very powerful, very prosperous. They control the salt trade. And they also have incredible gold-rich regions. So they've built up this huge reserve of gold. And they're the unquestioned power in the region. It's a little unclear how Musa ascends to the throne. In his own version of the story, his predecessor had launched 2 expeditions to explore the Atlantic with 2,200 ships, which is very impressive. And this predecessor led the second expedition himself and asked Musa to be his regent until he returned from the voyage. But when he never returned, Musa becomes the Mansa. This is plausible. But what probably actually happened is that Musa deposed of his, disposed of his predecessor, presumably in a pretty grisly fashion, and took the throne for himself. But I like the more romantic notion of being lost at sea. Anyway, regardless of how it happened, Mansa Musa assumes the throne and starts making preparations for his Hajj to Mecca. So he's a very dedicated Muslim. He fosters Islam within the empire. He fights the non-Muslim states near him in Africa. But it's his Hajj that makes him really famous.
How do you have time for any of that when he was building and maintaining a fleet of 2,200 ships?
I know. Well, you will have the answer to that question when I tell you just how much gold this man had.
Oh.
It's unreal. So his Hajj, he leaves in 1324 in this absolutely insane procession that reportedly included 60,000 men, of which 12,000 were enslaved, all wearing the finest Persian silk. There were 80 camels and presumably lots of other animals. And as I was reading this, I was basically imagining the scene in Aladdin, the Prince Ali song with the big procession. I think that is actually footage from this Hajj in 1324. But the most notable feature of the Hajj was the gold. Mansa Musa was absolutely swimming in it. So all of these numbers are 100% accurate. Do not dispute. Each of the slaves carried 1.8 kilos of gold bars, or 4 pounds for our American listeners. And each of the camels carried as much as 300 pounds of gold dust.
Mm.
Why dust? I don't know. But that's what the camels were carrying. All told, it may have been as much as 18 tons of gold in this procession. And it's just an absurd amount of gold. Also, famously heavy and not great for traveling.
Yeah.
Especially when you're plodding across the desert for much of this.
How much gold do you think has ever been mined? So this is a good fact that I know.
Oh, more than 18 tons.
Yes, more than 18 tons. Do you know, Will?
In mass.
In mass, or, I mean, the crazy part is not the mass. The crazy part is the volume. But yeah.
I reckon like not that big a volume. I reckon like a square kilometer.
A square kilometer. So actually, it's 200,000 tons, which fits into a cube that's about 20 by 20 by 20.
Meters?
Yeah, meters.
No way.
Yeah, it's a tiny amount.
That is crazy.
So this guy had like a smaller cube, this but still a significant cube.
This guy had 0.009% of all the gold that had ever
that's
been
a lot of gold.
Harvested.
That is a lot of gold.
Harvested?
Yes, that's right.
Reaped from the fields.
Sorry, segue, but I think gold's fascinating.
No, that's a great fact. That's insane. That's why you have so much of it in that 20 by 20 by 20
It's why
cube.
I've got the storage space. Yeah. I don't need anything bigger than like 25 square cubic meters.
Now, how much of that gold is in Victoria Peak?
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We famously talked about in a previous episode. Anyway, Moose has got a ton of gold. He just splashes this cash everywhere he goes on this pilgrimage. He gives it to poor people he meets along the route. He traded it for souvenirs. He gave it to cities where he stayed. He also spread these rumors that gold grew like a plant in his kingdom. And it's possible that this influx of gold, when he passed through Egypt, actually wrecked the Egyptian economy by causing the price of gold to plummet and not recover for 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's that much
is
gold.
Inflation, yeah.
Yeah. So he did a little inflationary.
Terrible time to buy houses in Egypt.
Yeah, it's awful. And then don't even get me started on the Nile flooding is, you know. Some historians think that he might have been the richest person in history. So there are all these attempts to figure out how much money he'd have in today's world. And it's so impossible to judge. But I saw one figure that said it might have been as much as $400 billion.
That's a lot of billions.
It's a lot of billions. And the source of that was celebritynetworth.com. So obviously, totally legit, highly trusted, twice as much money as Elon or whatever. Rich guy. Of course, things being as they are, Mansa Musa's entourage runs into trouble on the way back from Mecca. Many of the Malians died of cold or starvation or bandit raids. They lose their supplies. Musa runs out of money and has to borrow some, as well as sell a bunch of the stuff he bought on the way. But because he'd rubbed elbows with some pretty impressive people and given them these lavish gifts, they do take care of him and he's able to make it back to Mali. And on the way home, he also brings the cities of Gao and Timbuktu into the fold of the empire. He builds lots of buildings, cities, palaces. One scholar estimated that the empire, the Mali Empire, had 400 cities, which is just crazy. I couldn't even name 400 cities that exist today, let alone
in
one empire. Yeah. Another, you know, absolutely undisputable fact. This is a definite fact. In 1327, Mansa Musa commissions a famous architect from Andalusia to build the great Djingareber Mosque, which actually still stands in Timbuktu to this day. So, yeah, this mosque actually still stands in Timbuktu. If you've ever read about Timbuktu or Mali, you can probably picture it. It's this kind of big conical, sort of looks like an earthen mound with all these little spikes coming out of it almost. Mm. So that is something that he commissioned. He also established diplomatic relations with neighbors. He solidified Mali's position as a center of commerce and learning, all that stuff we know and love at this point. And I kept reading about this guy expecting there to be some horrific revelation, but all in all, he seems relatively unproblematic by the standards of the time. You know, there wasn't a ton of bloodshed. Just, you know, the regular amount.
Going to get the vaulted randomly history club seal of approval.
Well,
good guy of history.
It's possible that he accidentally killed his mother when he was young.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
But we're not sure. And anyway, I'm sure it was just an accident.
I think you should be allowed one immediate family murder.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Otherwise, we're never giving this up.
There would be no one.
Like, we're in black tie for nothing, then.
Yeah. That shouldn't automatically exclude you.
Yeah. I'm not having this gala just so that somebody can cancel Mansa Musa. Anyway, he probably died in 1337. It's possible it was a few years before that. It's possible that he, on the way back from Hajj, decided he wanted to go to Mali to abdicate and then return and go back and live in Mecca. But he did end up dying in Mali and his son took over and everything was pretty straightforward. One fun postscript, Mansa Musa was portrayed in the episode of
Succession.
yes, he is portrayed by Sarah Snook. She's amazing. She can do anything. No, the YouTube series Epic Rap Battles of History.
Nice. Yeah.
So there's an episode, Jeff Bezos versus Mansa Musa. And Musa is played by the rapper Screwface John. And I was like, oh, this is going to be hilarious, but I should probably watch it just in case. It's awesome.
Is it really?
It's like, it's genuinely great. Great rhymes. I think Mansa Musa absolutely destroys Bezos. But if you haven't been listening to me this whole time, that's fine. Just go watch that video. It's like four minutes
long. It's not the real Bezos. Bezos?
No.
Yes, the real Bezos is in an epic rap battles. Actually, honestly, that's not insane. He is. That is something he would do. No, Bezos is played by some dude. But highly recommended. Go watch it. And that is just a little bit about Mansa Musa, perhaps the richest man in all of history.
I like it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And preliminary good guy of history.
Yeah, good guy with minor asterisks.
Okay, this week I'm going to talk about someone called Archibald Douglas.
Oh, good. Good.
Let me guess, he was from Malaysia.
He was a Malaysian nobleman, also of Scottish heritage.
Okay, yeah.
Primarily, most of what's recorded of him, it speaks to his Scottish heritage.
Okay.
So we'll focus on that.
Yeah.
And at this time, in 1328, he was just born, nearly. And who his full titles were Archibald Douglas, Earl of Douglas and Wigtown, Lord of Galloway, Douglas and Bothwell.
And Wigtown.
Wigtown is where my family is from.
Well, this guy was Earl of there.
Oh, this is my uncle.
Chief Wig. He was a big wig.
Yeah.
Hey, get it?
Yeah, I get big.
Yeah, there you go. Good. You're welcome. That's good. Free.
Excellent.
That's comedy. Comedy podcast.
He was also called Archibald the Grim or Black Archibald.
Oh. Archibald the Grim is pretty good.
That's pretty cool.
You don't hear about an Archibald and think grim.
I don't know. Archibald's a pretty evil name.
Yeah, I would think like portly.
So a word on this guy's family first. His father went on crusade, obviously, as everyone did at the time. Yeah. But he was killed at the Battle of Tabor, which is in Malaga in Spain.
Okay.
Fighting the Moors. And his father had gone on crusade originally because the king at the time, Robert the Bruce, one of the more famous kings from Scottish history, had made him promise that as Robert the Bruce was dying, he made Archibald's father promise that he would take Robert the Bruce's embalmed heart and go crusading with this embalmed heart.
Oh, wow.
And then take it on to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in the Holy Lands. So that he could have in some way gone crusading and been to the Holy Lands.
Imagine you're the priest of the Holy Sepulchre and some guy comes up exhausted, draggled from war.
Yeah.
Finally, I've made it. Yeah. I've brought you this. It's like,
just like shoves a heart at you.
Yeah.
That's also
stick it with the rest of them.
Yeah, just chuck it on the mound. That's like one of those favors that you really hate accepting.
Yeah.
Like not a deathbed favor. Please do me this kindness. And you're like, yeah, I'll water your plants or whatever.
I have made so many deathbed pledges that I've reneged on.
No, and yet you haven't died.
I've got a cupboard full of hearts.
And this guy literally died honoring the quest, right?
Yeah,
so
wow.
Like, you know, he went off to Spain at the time.
And then did Robert the Bruce haunt him forever because he didn't make it to the Holy Land?
He haunted him and his son.
Yeah.
And now he haunts me. Which is actually quite nice company.
Yeah.
To have.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's like to have someone always around.
Yeah.
And we don't know too much about how Archibald looked, but Walter Bower, who was a chronicler at the time, described him in a way that was probably just meant to insult him. So he described him as dark and ugly, more like a cook boy than a noble.
More like a cook boy.
Yeah. Not great.
Cook boy is a good
I don't know. Every time we go to a restaurant, Anna falls in love with a cook boy.
That's true. I really do. I have a type. So already I'm in love with Archibald Douglas.
All those exposed forearms and chopping things.
And there was another chronicler.
Stop it.
There's another guy who described him as a large man capable of wielding a huge sword.
Oh.
Somewhere in between. Yeah, exactly right. So it's been suggested that the young Archibald spent time with his cousin William. In fact, he definitely spent time with his cousin William in exile in the court of the exiled King David, which was in Normandy at a place called Chateau Gaillard. And quite naturally, like all the Scots at the time, they then, if you're a nobleman and you're a Scot and you're in exile in France, you were kind of also then in the court of the French king and also then associating with the French aristocracy.
Yeah.
Because they were all allied at the time.
And the Scots hate the English.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So this is like the peak of the period, historically known as like the Auld Alliance, the AULD Alliance.
Oh.
So this is the great alliance between Scotland and France, which lasted for hundreds of years.
Is this why Mel Gibson hooked up with the French one?
Exactly.
In the movie. Gotcha, makes sense.
I actually can't remember the details of that. So,
let's say yeah.
But let's go with it. Yeah. So this is like the height of that Great Alliance at the time, which was really, it was like a kind of mutual NATO thing to counter the English.
That's why there are so many crabs and creperies. I mean, this like combine the two cuisines.
Yeah. Exactly. A deep fried crab crepe.
Yeah. Oh, wood smash.
And so his first major appearance in history was in 1356 at the Battle of Poitiers, where he fought with the French. So he was a Scottish nobleman fighting with the French against the English. But unfortunately, the English won the Battle of Poitiers, his Hundred Years' War, and quite resoundingly. And they managed to catch the guy. And but he did. He managed to then escape from captivity from the English because his cousin William Douglas managed to get him out, basically. And they then managed to escape back to England. But the story of how they escaped is quite cool. So he was basically in captivity, and there was an English soldier guarding both him and another nobleman called William Ramsay. So William Ramsay. And when the soldier came back in to check on them, Ramsay then pretended to be like furious with Archibald. Mm. And he accused him of stealing his cousin's armor prior to the battle that they'd just lost. And Ramsay was shouting and pretending to be really angry, and saying that his cousin had died because from an English arrow, and that he'd only died because Archibald had stolen the armor. Concocted this whole story. And then Ramsay's then like just like really getting into the improv of the moment and just like riffing.
Just so yes,
he's like,
anding all over
exactly,
the place.
Exactly. So he's like, yes, and take off your boots.
Yeah.
And Archibald's like, what, my boots? He's like, yes, and your boots.
Yeah.
And so Archibald takes off his boots, and Ramsay starts hitting him around the head with the boots. and then this is true. And then at that point, this is the point that the soldier guarding them like intervened. He's like, just can you stop, please? This is Archibald. This is a very important nobleman. Yep. We're hoping to ransom him off. Don't like break him. Yeah. Don't break our prisoner. And then Ramsay retorted at this point, "Not he, I tell you. He is a scullion and a rogue." And then he said to Archibald, "Go, you rascal, seek your master's body amongst the slain, so that we may at least give him a decent burial." And then Ramsay then offered to pay 40 shillings to the soldier, which was just the ransom for an esquire, like an assistant.
Yeah.
And so he managed to convince them that the Archibald wasn't Archibald, that he was Archibald's assistant.
This is amazing. And then Ramsay got the world's first Academy Award.
And free boots.
Yeah.
All it cost him was like being hit across the head with some boots.
Yeah. Yeah. If the boots were more than 40 shillings, he's come out well on top.
He's done so well.
Yeah. He's done pretty well, actually.
Although he is still in jail. And the English captors completely bought the whole thing and thought that Archibald was then just the esquire or an assistant to nobility. And Archibald managed to make his way all the way back to Scotland.
Wow.
They took the 40 shillings and off he went.
It goes to show that ugly, ignoble looking people can get ahead in life.
Yeah.
And that's what saved him. And I hope too to get ahead in life someday. If ever I'm captured, this guy's not worth anything.
Aunt, I'll make a promise to you now. If we're ever captured together, mm-hmm. I will beat you with my boots.
If only I looked disarmingly low status.
No one would ever think you were the cook boy.
It's a king's ransom for Will. Jeez, you're never getting it.
So it was at this point that he then began to rise to prominence. So he was then appointed Constable of the Tower, of Edinburgh Castle.
Okay.
And Sheriff of Edinburgh and Warden of the Western March. So these are big senior positions Lowland Scottish.
I mean, they can't be that big if you can do all of them at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're probably not very
well. He was a bit of a legend. So at this point, the English were like occupying a chunk of what should have been in that territory. And over the following few years, he managed to then like conduct a bunch of raids against the English and progressively then kicked the English out of those territories.
Nice.
So, you know, which is really quite an achievement. And then by this time, he then found himself in this position of being this trusted senior noble. So he had a lot of experience in battle. He'd like governed competently. He was like an old hand on the political scene, just really well trusted. And so there was some diplomacy to be done. When there was diplomacy to be done in France, he was the one who was sent over. So and one of these trips was then to renew the old alliance, this like hundreds year old alliance between Scotland and France. And that became the Treaty of Vincennes, which is the... I mean, really what was going on at the time was there was the expectation they'd remained allied, but you had to kind of renew it every few decades and have more diplomacy to renew the thing. So that was like a huge diplomatic achievement at the time.
It's like when Heidi Klum and Seal were married. Every 5 years, they would they would have another ceremony and decide if they wanted to continue to be married.
And he had to kiss another rose.
And he had to, yeah, exactly. And then I guess at one point they were like, do we still want to do this? And one of them or both of them said no, and they got divorced.
And they're actors. They're actors.
It's exactly like that.
Heidi Klum is Scotland and Seal is France.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like that. And then his final gig was then ruling over Galloway, which was given to him by King David because, quote, he took the trouble to purge the country of English blood, unquote. Oh. Which is a good reason to.
He took the trouble.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You know what? He gave up a weekend for it. Yeah.
And he's probably got like Doc Martin etched into his head for the rest of his life.
Yeah. So this was like a really difficult area to rule over because the Galwegians had, at the time, in 1360s, 70s, 80s, had a whole set of distinctive laws and customs. They basically considered themselves a totally different culture, really. Okay. And they hadn't been ever dominated by the sort of central Scottish authority and power. Okay. So actually, it was a really, really unruly region that the Scottish were basically occupying, really, at the time. But by the time, again, like by the time he had, he left that area, he had succeeded in doing like another first, which was bringing it completely under the control of the Scottish crown. And he was depicted on the Seal of Galloway by which shows two wild, like, quote, wild men holding up their arms on the seal. So like, okay. He's sort of known for having brought it under Scottish control.
It's one thing to be subjugated to a central power. It's another thing to have that rubbed in your face every day in the form of the new seal of your territory. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, that's actually my dad on there being forced to surrender.
As a wild man myself, I don't like it. Yeah.
No, yeah. Although it's really hard to capture your essence. I've tried for my own seal and it's just, you look crazed every time.
Wild cook boy.
Yeah.
And he set up Threave Castle, which stands to this day, and that was the seat of his power. And that's where eventually in 1400 he died. And he's buried at Bothwell, and after many, many decades of noblemaning and warring and quelling.
What
a good effort.
What a cool story, and so well rooted in the year 1328.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, really, really 1328-y.
Really speak, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it just resonated with that.
I mean, if 1328 didn't happen as a year, then none of these things could have happened, I suppose. You know, if you think of that.
Yeah, way. I mean, history is a little bit on the like 50-50. He may have been born a year or two after.
Okay.
I love it.
That's great.
Yeah, absolutely passes.
Okay, thank you for joining us. That's everything you'd ever need to know about the year 1328. 1328. I realized in the script I've typed it out twice, but I think it was just
so it's not that year. Because we gave you so many facts about 1328 that it was
double
worth
your value.
Reminding you.
But before we go, just a quick announcement. We will be finishing up series one of the Randomly Generated History Club very shortly.
Yes, that's right. And a quick note to the Americans listening, series here is what we would call season.
So was I supposed to say season instead of season?
Yeah,
season one.
I just don't want people to think this is the end of the whole show.
It's not the end of the whole
show.
Not
the end of the whole show. Just finishing up season one, series one. We're going to take the month of September off because all of us have just, we've just been poring over these dusty tomes for so long that
manuscript lung.
Yeah, absolutely. My hands smell like parchment.
I've been banned from the British Library.
That's because you've just been naked, furiously masturbating over English history.
Why so furious?
Yes, another war. Look at all these stolen artifacts from our empire. Yep, you gotta stop that.
Yep, so the good news is Will is about to have a lot more time on his hands. The great news for you, our dear listeners, is that we will be back with season two on the 3rd of October, I believe. So, yep, season two, series two will start on the 3rd of October, and we'll be back because at this point we have 2,950 years left to cover.
It also marks roundabout our anniversary as well.
Yeah, it's been about a year since we started the podcast, which is hilarious and awesome. So thank you for sticking with us the whole time.
And thank you especially to those who are supporting us on Patreon.
Yes,
at patreon.com/randomlyhistory.
Favorite people.
They are absolute favorite people.
They're just a cut above, you know?
Yeah.
You wouldn't mistake them from a cookboy. And if you subscribe to Patreon, I guarantee you your value for any sort of piratical kidnapping is going to go right up.
Yeah.
And you're going to be front of the queue for being paid for by your government.
Totally. I've got just like a herd of camels carrying some gold dust that I can't wait to throw at you.
To route them to somewhere.
Yeah. How many You'll be covered in gold dust and camel dung if you join our Patreon.
It is the guarantee we will provide.
So thank you for supporting us. Also, they get to not to have to listen to adverts.
Ads, yeah. Ads are the worst.
And get to pick a year if they want.
Ads are the worst, unless you're advertising with us, in which case I would say you're the best and thank you. I have a duplicity of loyalties here. Anyway.
Absolutely well said.
Let's go for the next year.
Yeah, yes. This will be the first year of the second season. So RNG, I beseech you humbly, if I can, make it a good one.
Okay, and the RNG is whirring into life, and the next year will be 32 BCE.
Okay. No.
All right, yep.
Romans, here we go, let's go.
We're doing something new for season two. We're going to talk about the Romans.
I was thinking the other day, is there any like alternative history that we can go? Is like some other like, you know, fictitious history or alternative Earth?
Okay, so one of the stories we do in 32 BCE will be entirely fictional and the listener has to decide.
That sounds like a great plan. All right, well, we will see you then. Have a great rest of August and September, and we'll see you on the 3rd of October.
Bye-bye.
See you in October. Bye.
Toodles.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.